If your 8-year-old you could walk right up to you and ask you one question, just one question, what do you think he would say?
Do you ever play anymore? Do you ever have fun anymore? Come out, come out, come out, come out and play with me.
Come out and play for a change. Welcome to Playing for a Change. This is your host, Brandy Heather. This podcast is dedicated to navigating life's messiness and unpredictability, where we use play as a catalyst for change and connection. Come on in. This playground is for everyone. On the playground today, I want to talk about something very serious. Many of us have stopped playing. When was the last time you did something so good and it gave you so much joy you lost track of time? I don't mean that you put your phone down or didn't look at the clock. I mean, you didn't care. I'm going to give you a moment here because for some, this moment was a long time ago and you didn't realize it might be one of the last times. You see, play is this wonderfully universal thing. You can travel anywhere in the world and people play, all people. You don't need language to share it or vision to see it. It has its own heartbeat. It's where we learn that curiosity is discovery and that the perfect hiding place that no one will think of is still a well-kept secret. Play has the ability to change our social interactions, our physical and mental health, our innovative and creative potential, and our drive to risk and fall down and get back up. In this first episode of Playing for a Change, I want to share a little bit about why I returned to the playground after a long time spent watching from the windows. In 2007, my daughter was 6 years old, and we were sitting in the psychiatrist's office. It was the first time she'd been there with me, and I felt like I had been there my whole life. After 33 years of living with depression and anxiety, I found myself unable to do many things. I was trying to work as a full-time college professor, pushing for tenure and job security, be a good wife and a mom, but I can't find my joy. And I don't have the energy to keep up the face that says, everything's good. Some of you know this face, and for a long time it was like playing in two realities, what was real and what you hoped people would believe. My doctor has suggested that we bring my daughter in to help explain what is going on with mom. I am teary and torn by this and try to engage as we talk, filter talk, like how is school and what do you like best? And then she asks, what's wrong with my mom? And he says, your mom doesn't know how to play anymore. She's forgotten how to play. At the time, it just strikes me as another failure in parenting, but because those seem to be piling up, I just push it aside. We try puppet play and dolls, and I try. I really try. But I can't play when I'm in a hole. And that's what it feels like. It's like I'm so deep in this hole, I can't even see the edge for a handhold. It's not where the story really starts, but it's here that I'm reminded of how and why play is so vital. Fast forward to 2009, and it's August, and I'm getting ready for back to school. But as I prepare my lectures, I find myself unable to recall content, remember the order of things and how I present them, and I can't find the notes that should come to me so easily. So silently, I start to work late at night, trying to put these pieces together without anyone knowing. And what used to take 2 hours is now taking me days. Okay, medication change. Increase this, decrease that, something new. My daughter is now 8, and we have a beautiful new daughter who is 2, who we adopted in July of 2007 after waiting 2 years for her to arrive. I have tenure, and I'm keeping it. It's the thing I know I am good at, teaching. I love it. It feeds my soul, and it keeps me moving forward. Students say I can light up a room, and I am an open door when they need connection. But September starts, and I'm finding it so hard to keep up. Mid-lecture, my words fail me and I have to stop. Okay, medication change. Increase this, Increase this, something new, something old. Now it's bad. So bad, I can't do up my daughter's coat in the morning. And I can't sleep, but I've hidden a mat under my desk so I can disappear after lecture to close my eyes. So I do what I dread. I ask for a lowered workload, temporarily, until I'm feeling better. And Christmas comes. Enough said. January 2009, I am medically committed to a psychiatric hospital as a harm to myself. And there is no more playground. But don't leave, because it's here that I find my play. For some, it will be hard to believe that your play is hidden in such dark places. But sometimes when you think you can't find it, you just need the space and support to look closer. When I arrive on the first night and I think that I can't have anything more taken away from me, they take my shoelaces. I can look back now and say I was confused and numb, and I didn't ask. But of course, shoelaces would make me a danger to myself and others. So I take everything out of my pockets and I remove my shoelaces, and now I feel like there's not much left to take. I have reminded several nurses on staff several times that I am a college professor and that I am smart, as I feel I might get lost in the hospital pajamas they have given me. And as I walk down to my room, which I guess will be a 5-star hotel, I am greeted by 2 roommates in an open room with cloth curtains that separate my pain from theirs in a simple cloth curtain. I turn and ask the nurse, "When will I be moved to a private room, as I have health coverage?" And the nurse replies that this is the room arrangement at the hospital. And I am devastated, as I hardly want to share this journey with anyone at all. But I have a secret. I have brought my MP3 player with music with me down the hallway, snuck past the shoelace guards, and this is my retreat, my pushback on the system. This may not seem like a big thing, but it was the only thing I was hanging on to at the time, and I felt like it might get me through. So it's 2 a.m. when I get somewhat settled, and I put my headphones in to listen to the 3 songs I have on my MP3 player. I'm kicking myself for not being more prepared for a long-term hospital stay with more than 3 songs and the lyrics of Jonathan Livingston Seagull on my MP3 player. A woman from the other bed comes over to me, and I'm sure at this point, this is probably the end of my life because I'm scared of everything and everyone right now. She goes to move my MP3 player, and I strike out with, "Don't touch that!" She says, "If they find it, they will take it." And she tucks it between my mattress. She says nothing else, and she leaves me and my pain. This same person shows me kindness in the next 4 weeks that helped me to navigate things like shower rooms and guest passes and how to find the best milkshake and when to go to the kitchen to get the best choices. These will seem like small things, but in this space, they were saving my life every day. The day comes when she says to me that she gets to go home, and I am so excited for her because her journey has been a significant one. 2 weeks later, in the middle of the night, I hear screaming down the hallway and slamming into things. This is not uncommon here, but it wakes me out of my semi-medicated sleep. It is my friend, and she has returned. And this time, she is accompanied by guards, wrapped naked in a blanket, screaming and terrified. And they put her in a room that we don't talk about in the hallways. And when I ask them to tell me how she is, they can't tell me. The next day in the shower, which, yes, we share, I see that security and a nurse is assisting her to have a shower, and she has no feeling, no affect, and does not recognize me. And they are bathing her with hospital soap. So I pass my real soap to the nurse to use. You see, I'm leaving the next day, and I know the dignities of real soap now. I know the value of my own clothes and the strength to make decisions and wear socks, and the value of having gotten to keep my MP3 player when I couldn't keep my shoelaces. She saved me that night. So I take out a yellow ruled notepad and I write, "Dear Wynn, I know that today you feel you will never leave here and you feel lost and alone. but you gave me more grace and strength in a single gesture that first night than I was even capable to give myself for a very long time. You are strong and capable, and you will get better and leave this place and survive. I'm leaving you my favorite penguin pajamas. They seem to have kept me safe while I was here, and I hope that they will bring you comfort. I left all my shampoo and other toiletries in case no one visits or knows how valuable they are. And I leave them with the nurse for her. And I get to go home, back to my life, to start rebuilding and healing. And even though I think of her often, I do not. I get caught up in getting caught up. 6 months later, I'm in Costco, and a woman comes up to me who I do not recognize. And she calls my name, and she hugs me so hard I can hardly breathe. And out of her wallet, she pulls a yellow note, and she says, "Your words save my life. I read this every day. I am literally committed to play. In this podcast, I want to share the lighter side, the real side, and the ways that play and authentic connection has and can create change. It's okay to watch from the window for a while, but eventually you might venture back and find yourself ready to try again. Everyone is welcome in this playground. Come out and play."
If your 8-year-old you could walk right up to you and ask you one question, just one question, what do you think he would say? Do you ever